Give me a beat. Thank you for pushing play. You are listening to the Rarity is Fundamental podcast, episode 12. And you know this episode is going to be pitching. What's up, Internet? This is the Rarity is Fundamental podcast, episode 12, recorded on May the 4th, 2015. I am your host, Ray Morali. You also know me as Ray Ray. You guys know that I love singing. I also love terrible pop music. So we all know that the movie Pitch Perfect is absolutely perfect for me. And they are coming out with a sequel, which is due out in less than 2 weeks. And if you guys know me at all, I like playing this little game where I put out old pop song lyrics and I usually hope someone answers me back with the next line to that song, whether it's on Twitter or Facebook or even on texting. I send out lyrics and I always hope someone answers back with the next line. That's all. I get great amusement out of that for some reason, and it gives me a gauge on who actually listens to the music I listen to, and sometimes it brings out the closet pop music listeners, so I just think it's really fun. Anyway, that's why I enjoyed the riff off from Pitch Perfect. There aren't enough singing battles in these streets. You see dance battles, but never singing battles. And, you know, sometimes I hope I get to participate in one of those or whatever, you know? I remember that one of my goals is to get an NBA player to respond to my lyrics, but the closest to that so far was Ron Artest's brother. He actually responded to a Spice Girls lyric. It was pretty amazing. So maybe one day I'll get an NBA player to respond back to me, but I do know that plenty of NBA reporters / personalities have responded back to me in terms of lyrics. So it's always fun. I just think it's, you know, it's one of my quirks. I just find that fun. Okay. Anyway, the perfect guest to bring back, I've said perfect every single time, for this Pitch Perfect podcast is ESPN's Adam Reisinger. As you know, we talked Britney Spears on episode, I believe, 5. So now, in this episode, we'll talk a little NBA with a playoff picture and Stephen Curry winning the Most Valuable Player Award. And we're going to do some Pitch Perfect talk. Cool? Cool. Scratch. On the line, my first return guest on the Rarity is Fundamental podcast, Adam Reisinger. You know him from ESPN. How's it going?
Oh, it's going very well. Playoffs are going well. Life is going well. Everything is good. Other than Kevin good. Love's shoulder.
Ah, yeah, that's a bummer, dude. Like, I mean, I understand you have to, like, you know, wrap your arms around when you're boxing out and stuff like that, but man, it's just unfortunate. You think it was a dirty play?
Oh, to be honest, I wasn't watching it in real time, and so I saw the reaction first before I saw the play. Mm-hmm. So it's hard for me to judge because the reaction was so split. All the Cavs fans I follow on Twitter were like, oh, that was a dirty play. Kelly Olynyk should be banned from the league and he's the worst player ever. And the Celtics fans are all like, oh, that was nothing. It was just an accident. Kelly's a big clutch. It's bound to happen. It was so split right away. And so I went back and watched it and I'm like, I guess you could see it either way. Mm-hmm. Like he wraps his fingers around the arm, which makes it seem a little more intentional, but you know, Love locked arms first. So maybe he was just, you know, reacting to that. I don't know. Without Kelly Olynyk coming out and saying, yeah, I pulled his arm on purpose, like, we're never going to know for sure.
Yeah.
It wasn't a good-looking play, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. It certainly sucks that Kevin Love is out for the playoffs. It sucks for two reasons, because obviously it hurts the Cavs' chances of winning even the East, much less the title.
Right.
But then, if they do manage to get to the finals, like, people are going to somehow make it about Kevin Love and how he's not successful again. See, they didn't need Kevin Love. They're better without Kevin Love. Kevin Love's a choker and he's never a winner. And it's like, oh my God, I don't need that.
Yeah. I mean, I essentially thought that it changed the balance of the East right there.
Oh, it absolutely did.
Yeah.
You
exactly.
Know, it makes the Bulls-Cavs series much closer. You can definitely see the Bulls winning the series now. I still think the Cavs. It's tough to say because it's not just Kevin Love. The Cavs are without J.R. Smith for the first two games too.
Yeah.
So if the Bulls can somehow steal both of those, that would go a long way for them winning the series, because I'm not sure they lose, you know, the four of the next five.
Mm-hmm. Before Kevin Love got hurt, I was thinking, oh, there is no way it's not going to be a Hawks-Cavs East Finals.
Yeah, now it looks like it could easily be Bulls-Hawks, or even it definitely looks like it could be Bulls-Wizards, too.
Yeah, yeah.
No one wants Bulls-Wizards other than the fans of those two teams.
Yeah, I mean, the West is where it's at, but even then, like, the West kind of disappointed other than the Clippers-Spurs series.
Yeah, all season long, all the talk in the West was how great the first round would be. Every matchup's going to be amazing. And then the Clippers-Spurs was amazing, and the other three series were like, oh, those happened.
Yeah, the Blazers got hurt. What is the other series?
The Mavs faded, and the Pelicans never really stood a chance.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I'm disappointed with the Mavs because – I thought, okay, maybe playoff Rondo would show up because the Mavs looked so good early in the season. And yeah, injuries played a part, but I thought, hey, you know what? Carlisle and Rondo are pros, they'll work it out. And it turns out to be the opposite.
Yeah, Rondo never fit in there. And it's disappointing because that offense at the beginning of the season, before Rondo arrived, looked historically good.
Yeah.
And then they mixed it up with Rondo and it never clicked.
Yeah. I mean, in hindsight, people are going to say, well, you should have never traded for Rondo, but I thought it's like a risk worth taking. What do you think?
Yeah, given what they gave up, it was absolutely a risk worth taking. It just didn't work. You know?
Yeah.
And I mean, there were red flags when they traded for him. You know, Monte Ellis has had trouble in the past working with ball dominant point guards.
Yeah.
But you couldn't have expected it to have flamed out that badly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it just happens. You make a move, and sometimes it just doesn't work. Kind of like, you know, Dwight Howard going to Sixers. It just didn't work. So
yeah.
You take the risk. Yeah. So the Spurs are gone. You think their this dynasty is pretty much done? Duncan's gonna retire, maybe. Ginobili likely more to retire.
I do think it definitely seems like Ginobili is leaning towards retirement, but it also seemed that way after the 2013 Finals, and he came back
and
won
the
title. So.
That's true too.
Until Popovich, Duncan, Parker, and Ginobili are all gone from San Antonio, I refuse to ever say that team is dead. We declared them dead in 2008. We declared them dead in 2010, 2011. They've been dead so many times, and they keep coming back. They got to the finals again in 2013. They won a title in 2014.
Mm-hmm.
Like the one thing that is always going to be a mark on them is that they never won back-to-back titles.
Oh, boy. Five titles in the Duncan Popovich era. That's not so bad, right? But
yeah.
For some reason, they get criticized for not defending it the year after. So
yeah, and it's weird because in other sports, you know, in football, in baseball, in hockey, like back-to-back titles are rare. But then in the NBA, with really the notable exception of the Spurs, it happens constantly.
Yeah, yeah. Ever since the Lakers repeated, and then the Pistons went back to back, then the Bulls repeated twice.
Yeah,
Rockets
for a while it was literally every champion. You know, the Spurs broke that streak. You know, the Pistons only won the one. The Celtics only won the one. The Heat the first time only won one. But repeat champions are more common in the NBA than non-repeat champions, at least since the mid-80s.
Yeah, so whoever wins the title this year, oh my god. I mean, it's funny because the remaining playoff teams left, I think only two returned from the quarterfinals, the Clippers and the Wizards. Every other team were eliminated either in the first round or eliminated from the playoffs period.
Yeah, it's a new breed this year.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
We've got a chance. There are a couple teams, Cleveland notably, the Clippers notably, the Grizzlies less of a chance, but there are a couple teams that could actually be first-time NBA champions.
And yeah.
The other teams, the Hawks haven't won it in, like, forever. The Wizards haven't won it since the 70s. The Warriors haven't won it since the 70s. Mm-hmm. You know, the Rockets and Bulls, the 90s. So it's been a while for this entire group. Mm-hmm. This is not a normal group of NBA champions.
Yeah, and we pretty much thought that, the NBA is unpredictable this season. And when the playoff seedings came out, I was just like, oh my God, the Spurs might win it all over again. You know?
And
so it could be predictable once again, but the Spurs are gone now. So
it shows you how important that last game of the season was, because if the Spurs beat the Pelicans, mm-hmm. they're the two seed. They get the collapsing Mavs in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're playing Houston in this round, because they wouldn't have lost to the Mavs.
Right.
Or they'd probably be getting the Clippers in this round, because I think Houston would have fallen to like five. So, I mean, that first round series would have been a second round series. And mm-hmm. who knows what happens if the Spurs have a little more momentum, you know, four more wins under their belt, if the series plays out the same way, and if the Spurs have home court, because it went to seven.
People talk about, like, that playoff momentum actually doesn't exist. Do you believe that? Because I've seen it over Twitter before the playoffs started. It's like, no such thing as playoff momentum. You can come into the playoffs cold, 3-7, and you'll still be okay.
I don't think there's necessarily momentum going into the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen teams perform poorly down the stretch and be fine. Mm-hmm. We've seen it both ways. They looked awful down the stretch. Mm-hmm. But they got a Toronto team that looked just as awful down the stretch.
Yeah.
You know, handled them very well, and mm-hmm. then took game one against an Atlanta team that didn't look great in the first round. And so I think that's what you're seeing, is they're building up. It's calling it momentum is weird, because momentum is this vague thing that no one can really put a fine point on. They're building off success, and they're building on things that work and repeating them over and over, game after game.
Right.
That can happen when you see the same opponent every game. Mm-hmm. And if they're not adjusting to what's working for you, then you don't have to make adjustments. Just keep doing what's working.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we forget the Wizards are still undefeated in the playoffs this season. They did sweep the Raptors, and they won game one against the Hawks. So with the Spurs gone, the Cavs are shaky with J.R. Smith and Kevin Love out. Is this an easy path for the Warriors now for the title?
It sure seems that way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you never want to say anything is easy. And I think whichever team wins that Clippers-Rockets series could give them a really good series in the Western Conference Finals. But I do think that if you had to pick Warriors or the field right now, mm-hmm. it'd be pretty close. And, I mean, you're talking one team versus seven. Like, I think I could be swayed to go Warriors over the field.
And you basically think that any team from the West will clobber the East at this point, right?
I don't know about clobber. Mm-hmm. The Bulls have a way of mucking things up.
Mm-hmm.
If the Hawks can rediscover the form that, you know, when they, you know, that made them winners of 60 games and 19 straight at one point, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, if Kyle Korver gets hot for a series, he could mess up everything. But I think whichever team comes out of the West, whether it's the Warriors, Clippers, Rockets, or Grizzlies, mm-hmm. is going to be a considerable favorite over the East.
So it was just announced earlier that Stephen Curry won MVP, and I'm a little surprised how the voting went, because everyone was talking about how it could be the closest MVP race since Magic and Barkley in 1990. Well, the voting came out, and Stephen Curry had 100 first-place votes compared to James Harden's 25. What do you think?
This is – since I've been working in sports, this is the third time I can remember where during the season the hype was that this was going to be one of the closest MVP races ever. And all three times it ended up not being that close. In 2008, it was a four-way race between Kobe, CP3, KG, and LeBron. And Kobe ended up winning it pretty handily. And then last year, everyone was like, oh, it's going to be, you know, around mid-season, right when LeBron had that 60-point game, it's like, oh, LeBron's back in the race. It's going to be super close. And KD ended up blowing him away.
Yeah.
So I think what ends up happening is it comes down to a few things. And I think by the time, particularly lately, by the time we get to April, people are kind of MVP talked out. Mm-hmm. And a consensus sort of settles in. And so you end up seeing wider margins than were discussed at the height of the race in around All-Star break or so.
So you look at Stephen Curry's game, it's way different than how it was in the 90s, maybe 10 years ago. And I read an article of our good friend Zach Harper's, where we're basically in the perimeter era now. What do you think of that?
It's definitely a more perimeter-based game. And Ethan Strauss actually had a similar column that he basically said that Curry's dominance in the modern game is like Shaq's dominance in the older game. Shaq was such a dominant force when the NBA was an inside-out league. And now that it's an outside-in league, Curry's innate ability to make shots from distances that most people can't and to get off his shot quickly makes him dominant in a way that we don't think of perimeter players as being. And I think he's right. I think that it's because of the way the game has changed, his game is so uniquely suited to that. And he's built his game like that. It's not like he came into the league, you know, being, 45% shooter from three and, you know, regularly making 27 footers.
Can we still see a Shaq type of player in the league in this modern era? That could be really dominant, that is.
Like a super dominant inside player?
Yeah.
Maybe? Mm-hmm. I think you could, but I think, mm-hmm. I mean, there have been rule changes that make it more difficult to do that. And, you know, it's easier to hedge down to the post and recover. You know, teams are looking to shoot threes more to take advantage of that extra point. Mm-hmm. It's going to take what you're not going to see is a player like Patrick Ewing again. And you're not going to see a player like Robinson again. But if someone came through, and I mean, it's super unlikely. It's exceedingly unlikely that this would ever happen. But if someone came through with the size and strength and low post agility like Shaq, then I think that player could, in fact, dominate like Shaq. But Shaq is a singular force in NBA history. There's never been a player like him before or after. And so to say, like, oh, there's going to be another Shaq to come along it's highly unlikely. It'd be like, honestly, it'd be like betting on the Spurs at this point to win the title this year. Like, just kind of throwing away your money.
Right, yeah. And I've said this several times on Twitter, because I always think that if some other player was taking the shot Stephen Curry was taking, he'd be benched. Does Stephen Curry actually take a bad shot in the league? Like, seriously.
Well, that's just it. It's, when it's Stephen Curry, it's not a bad shot. But, yeah. Like, I go back to that one I think it was against the Clippers, where he like dribbled into the lane and then dribbled back out and like turned and fired from the top of the arc without even really looking.
Yeah.
That was a bad shot. Mm-hmm. Like, there were like 14 seconds left on the shot clock, and it looked like he was firing away to beat the shot clock, but he made it. And so it's obviously we're such a results-based society in that if it goes in, it's a good shot. And
yeah.
There are a lot of shots that Stephen Curry takes that feel like, God, that's not a good shot. But for him, it is. Because he knows that he can make that. And I'm reluctant to even say this guy's name because it brings up so many angry people. But Kobe takes a lot of bad shots. Mm-hmm. And in his prime, he was capable of making those. He doesn't make them as frequently now. But he still thinks he can. Stephen Curry is at the point where he thinks he can make those bad shots, and he does. And sometimes taking a bad shot isn't always a terrible option because the defense isn't expecting it.
I was gonna go through the video of where he made 286 three-pointers. There's a video of that out there. And I wanted to count the type of shots that he made. Like, are they pull-up transition threes, or are defenders over him? Like, he just makes every kind of shot, whatever the situation is, and it's insane.
Yeah, he...
You know what I mean?
He just can make shots that other people cannot make, and quite frankly, should not take.
Yeah.
Like, and that's it's part of the reason that the MVP race I think was such a blowout is when you watch Stephen Curry, he's more exciting to watch because you watch him take one of those shots and you're like, oh my God, what is he doing? Oh my God, that went in. Mm-hmm. Whereas you watch James Harden's game and it's the basketball efficiency movement distilled down into a player. He takes good open threes. He drives into the lane. He draws fouls. He gets layups. It's not that other than he has these moments where he'll hit a few threes in a row or he'll throw down a great dunk in transition, but he doesn't get you up like Stephen Curry does. He doesn't get you to the edge of his seat like Stephen Curry does. And while that shouldn't be a factor in MVP voting, we're humans and we react certain ways. And voters who watch all these games, they factor that in whether they want to or not.
Yeah, I mean, Harden is more bully ball or whatever. He drives in, gets fouled, and it's just not as exciting as Curry taking a three whenever he pleases, basically. So yeah, that's just the way it is. And and we can even argue that Harden had better stats, really. I mean, at least per game stats, you know what I mean? So because that we get excited over Curry's game, that basically swayed the voters.
What it comes down to is to me, the biggest thing about Stephen Curry is he has literally changed the way that you have to defend the fast break against Golden State. Mm-hmm. If it's a 2-on-1 break, normal basketball coaching and teaching and everything you've learned from the time you first picked up a basketball was beat the man to the spot, defend the rim.
Mm-hmm.
You see a defender get back, plant himself in front of the charge circle.
Mm-hmm.
With the Warriors, if it's a 2-on-1 fast break and Curry has the ball, it is close out on Stephen Curry. That there is no other option. Even if it's Klay Thompson, you would much rather have Klay Thompson shooting an open three than Stephen Curry. And you would much rather have Curry passing it to Thompson for a layup than Stephen Curry. You mm-hmm. do not let Stephen Curry shoot an open three on the fast break. And that's the kind of player he is, that he has fundamentally changed the way that opponents have to play basketball.
But see, Curry is one of a kind, and this will be the last basketball question, but wouldn't that be bad for the kids growing up watching Stephen Curry? Because Curry's one of a kind, and he can take all the bad shots he wants.
If I'm a youth coach, there is literally no way that I am ever letting one of my players emulate Stephen Curry. You are not coming. You're not coming down on the fast break, dribbling to the wing and firing up a three. That puts you on the bench. Stephen Curry is Stephen Curry. Random 12-year-old playing basketball are not Stephen Curry. You are to dribble to the center of the court, draw your defender in, dish it to the wing for the layup on the fast break.
Get an easier shot, because for Curry, a three is literally a layup for him, but for nobody else.
Right, exactly.
We'll be right back with more Adam Reisinger after this break.
This is Robert Littow from the world's most dangerous website, Black Sports Online, and I want you to check out Ray Ray's Fundamental Podcast. It's the best in the business. It's not none of that BS. It's all about keeping it real and keeping it authentic, so definitely check it out.
Here's the second half of the interview with Adam Reisinger from ESPN.
Okay, let's get to the good stuff.
The good Pitch stuff.
Pitch Perfect.
Best movie ever.
I actually just literally like rewatched it like a few days ago, and I'm just like, wow.
I might have rewatched it this morning before this podcast.
So, you know what? Even before the movie came out like 3 years ago, I was like, there are actually literally competitions for this. Seriously, like worlds basically. Like I didn't even know there was like an a cappella competition. Like I know like each school had like, you know, an a cappella group, obviously songbirds and whatnot, but I didn't think there was like a competition for this.
Well, it's funny because when it came out, I watched the whole series. I watched Glee regularly. And so I knew about the whole like a cappella show choir world, but I had reached the point in Glee. This was probably, it came out around like season 3 of Glee, maybe season 4, where I was kind of over Glee. Like I was still watching it because I never give up on shows. I'm really bad with
Yeah.
that. Mm-hmm. But I was watching it, and I started seeing promotions for Pitch Perfect. I was like, oh, yeah. So this is like Glee the movie. This is going to be awful. And then at the same time, I was following Elizabeth Banks on Twitter because I was following everyone in the 30 Rock cast.
Yeah, yeah.
She was guesting on 30 Rock at the time. And she was promoting it heavy. And I didn't realize that she was an executive producer on it. I just thought that she was in the cast. I was like, oh, my God, stop tweeting about this movie. It's Glee the movie. No one cares. Uh-huh. And so I didn't watch it when it was in theaters. And I didn't watch it when it first came out. It took me about a year and a half till I finally watched it. And literally the first time I watched it, like, I got it from Netflix. I still get DVDs from Netflix because I'm apparently 70 years old. and I got it from Netflix. I was literally halfway through the movie and I ordered the Blu-ray on Amazon. I was like, I don't even care how the rest of this movie is. I need to be able to watch this first 45 minutes of the movie over and over again. And
yeah,
and I watch it all the time, like way more than a normal human being should watch a single movie.
You know, like when I finally watched it, like, you know, a few months after it came out from the theaters. But like, I was like, this movie was literally basically made for me because like you see me on Twitter, I'm always singing lyrics and I'm hoping someone will respond to me, basically, right? And then we see it in, I guess, quote unquote, real life, and you have this riff off thing going on. I'm like, dude, this is what I pretty much do in real life too. You know what I mean? So, like, this movie was made for me, and I guess made for you too, since I know you're a big pop music guy yourself.
Oh yeah, I mean the song selection is great. There's not a single bad song that they sing in the entire movie. Even the stuff that they intentionally make the Bellas sing through their original performance set
right.
to try and like make them seem out of touch. Like I love The Sign. Like I jammed out that song. Awesome. You know, Ace of Base was my jam back in the 90s.
Yeah, I know, right? Like, yeah, we think of Ace of Base, we think of The Sign, and yeah, that was, you know, we're pretty much the same age, so it's like we jam into anything that's like, you know, in the mid 90s, and I just found it really amusing that I kept using that song over and over and over.
It's so great.
Yeah. So, what songs would you want in the second? I also know that apparently there's going to be a third movie of this as well. So, what songs would you want to see? I'm pretty sure other than Britney Spears, because I know you're a big Britney guy.
I mean,
so.
We've seen some of the songs in the trailer. Like it seems like there's a riff off scene again, and I mean. Getting Poison in there is fantastic. Like, I spent an entire summer at summer camp when I was like 10 years old listening to nothing but Poison. I had the cassette single and I wore that out. So I mean that's a great choice. The one song, like just as a personal, like I would love it if it was in there, but I can't imagine how they could fit it in, would be Timber. Like they had Pitbull in the
yeah.
Bella's finals in the first movie. So if they could if they could somehow squeeze Timber into Pitch Perfect 2, like that would just, I'm pretty sure I would die in the theater. Like I would explode from joy.
I never actually thought of that. Now I want Timber in Pitch Perfect 2. So in the last performance of the Bellas, where Becca puts in "Don't You Forget About Me."
Yep.
Do you think that's a great like final song to win someone's heart? Because I'm just kind of like, I guess, okay, sure, because it's personal to Jesse.
It's specific to Jesse and Becca. It's the first time that she tried to kiss him was when they were watching that.
And then
when they had their fight, it was she finally went and watched the whole movie and was brought to tears. And so it was her message to him, like, I'm sorry, I get what you were saying. Mm-hmm. You know, let's put all the bad blood behind us. And it is a good song for the finals, but it was the perfect wrap up for their storyline.
That's fair. Man, like Rebel Wilson just steals the show in this movie, man. Like,
see, it's funny because everyone who likes Pitch Perfect says that. Like, and she is incredibly funny throughout the movie. If I'm ranking the characters, I'm not sure she makes my personal top five.
Oh, so let's go with it.
So for me, Chloe is number one. That's a redhead thing. It's just redhead solidarity.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Becca number two.
She's also a redhead.
Yeah.
yeah.
Solid. Like obviously she's the main character of the movie, even though it's essentially an ensemble piece. She is the main character.
Yeah.
Going way off the board here. Number three for me, Donald.
Whoa, really?
Two reasons on Donald. Number one, his rapping brings something to the movie that no one else does.
That's true.
Number two, I am convinced that there's a secret storyline there that Donald slept with Stacy. and I'm pretty sure that Stacy is not the only Bella that he's slept with.
Yeah, I never thought about that.
But then I look
back at the riff off now that there's some chemistry going on there.
There's absolutely some chemistry. He reacts very interestingly to Stacy's introduction and her performance of Since You've Been Gone. And I'm pretty sure if you watch the Keep Your Head Up sing along, I'm pretty sure that he's the one that got Corey kicked out, because I'm pretty sure that he's the one that slept with her. so Donald's pimp game is strong.
Yeah, he's a secret Casanova that we're not even, you know.
Yeah.
Wow.
Number four for me is Cynthia Rose. And number five would probably be Jesse.
Yeah, Jesse's a good guy.
Fat Amy, probably right. Fat Amy, I could argue Fat Amy over Jesse. But I think Jesse's too important to the narrative of the movie, whereas Fat Amy is essentially she's there as comic relief and does a great job with it. But if you dropped Fat Amy from the movie, someone could pick up her one-liners, not doing as good a job as her. You drop Jesse from the movie, you suddenly don't have a movie.
That's true. That's true. I love Kimmy Jin only because of like her.
Oh my god!
I love Kimmy Jin.
The line that there are like five or six lines throughout the movie that get me every time, and one of them is when Becca's dad says, "Have you made any friends?" and Becca says, "Kimmy Jin is my friend," and she just deadpans no and doesn't even look over. Every time makes me laugh.
Oh, it's my white girl roommate or.
Oh, the white girl. Like, back.
The white girl's back. Yeah, I just died on that one.
Pitch Perfect, though it might not seem like it on the surface, is a sports movie.
You really went over this, didn't you?
It is absolutely a sports movie. It has all the trademarks of a sports movie, just with acapella being the sport. it has the ragtag bunch of losers who come together. It has the scene at the beginning where they suck. It has the alpha star. It has the conflict within the team. It has it has the training montage, and it has the victorious championship at the end. It has everything a sports movie has. It is 100% a sports movie.
Wow. You never cease to amaze me with these analogies. Did you also compare this to Michael Jordan's career as well?
No, I have not been able to match up pitch perfect to Michael Jordan's career. If we get a trilogy, we might be able to do that.
That's true too, because I mean, Rebel Wilson said there's going to be a third movie of this.
It's funny because when they first announced that there was going to be a second one, I was mixed. Mm-hmm. I had mixed feelings about it after I saw the first one. I was like, the first one was so perfect and so well contained. I'm not sure we needed a second one. But the fact is, it's not the story, it's not the journey of the plot that makes Pitch Perfect so good. It's the characters, it's the comedy, it's all of the little pieces that come together to make the movie so good. So it's really just getting a second movie is getting to spend more time with that, and I'm fine with that.
I mean, they kind of have to open at the end, right?
Yeah, I mean, they left it open.
Yeah.
You know, anytime you have a story that centers around a college freshman, it's easy to leave it open because, you know, three more years of college to work with. And it looks like they're skipping forward to Becca's senior year, which seems interesting to me because I don't know that the rest of the girls were clearly freshmen or even sophomores.
well, here's the thing. Like, this might not, you know, Anna Kendrick, then, if she's a senior or whatever, like, there may not be a, you know, she may not be in the third movie, right? I mean,
they'll find a way to keep her around for the third movie. They'll move beyond the college setting or something.
Well, I guess we'll see. She'd be 33 if we keep on the pace of Pitch Perfect because it comes out every 3 years or so. She'd be 33 at that point, and I'm not sure if she'd look, you know, like a young 20s girl by then or whatever.
If you want to go by that, she was 27 when the first movie came out playing.
Yeah, sure, too.
So.
See, now what I'm fearing here is that, like, they might make a TV series out of this.
See, that wouldn't work.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, I've watched Pitch Perfect probably more than any movie I could have. I watch it more than any person should watch any single movie. But it's because of its contained status and because it doesn't. Like, it goes through an entire school year in 2 hours. Mm-hmm. Getting Pitch Perfect, the series, and having them, like, work on new songs every week and have, like, some sort of long, drawn-out, you know, like, love interest story between two characters, like, that then brings you back to Glee territory, and no one...
Yeah.
Like, one of the things that makes Pitch Perfect interesting is how much of the gaps you have to fill in with the characters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't want an entire TV episode about Aubrey's obsessiveness with winning. You know,
yeah.
I don't want an entire TV episode about Cynthia Rose's gambling problem. You know, those things are funny in the context of short jokes in a movie.
Yeah, and of course we get an entire episode of just, like, you know, Donald's pimp game, right?
That I do. I want, if anything, I want a TV series about Donald the acapella pimp.
There we go. See, then maybe it's not so bad after
that's,
all.
That's what I want. I don't want a Pitch Perfect series. I want Donald the acapella pimp.
Yeah.
Going around the country, spitting game at acapella women.
Do you do riff-offs in real life? That's what I want to know.
Like, actual singing? Not a chance. I have no voice.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. We see dance battles all the time, you know, breakdancing and whatnot on the street, whatnot. But we don't really see singing battles a whole lot.
No, or riff offs. What I do try to do every once in a while is like you brought up earlier with Twitter is I'll throw out a lyric on social media.
Yeah,
and I just my only goal is that someone continues it, and it's so disappointing. Like the other day, I posted like the first line of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air theme song on Facebook. Uh-huh. And immediately someone broke the chain with a comment that was like, oh, I love that show. I'm like, that's not what I'm going for. I'm supposed to pick up a song.
You know, I did that on Twitter. I said, in West Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And then someone else came in. Shout out to you, Josh Zavadil. He then said, why are you there?
You're supposed to go born and raised.
Exactly. A lot of them went born and raised. And then, you know, Josh was just like, why are you there? I'm like, oh my god, are you serious? Really? Yeah. Actually, my goal on social media, and it still hasn't happened yet, is to get an NBA player to respond to a lyric. And I haven't been able to do that yet. So
my only goal on social media right now is to get the official Pitch Perfect account to retweet me.
There you go.
It will.
There you go.
I don't have a folder of 200 Pitch Perfect reaction gifs for no reason.
Yeah, I know. Like, you basically just literally gave me a Pitch Perfect reaction yesterday or something, like, or a few days ago. So that was awesome. But yeah, like, I've gotten so many people to respond to lyrics. I think you included as well. You know, I've gotten silent reporters to respond to my lyrics. You know, shout out to Jamie Maggio. Shout out to Chester Basio for responding to me. And even Kristen Letta, who's responded to the lyric.
If you drop a Britney lyric, there's a solid, like, 70% chance that Kristen Letta will respond. Shout out to
Exactly, yeah. Although, I think she responded to a GT lyric and a Destiny's Child lyric to me. So, yeah.
New Britney song, by the way. That obviously is in the new Pitch Perfect movie, but new song out.
I didn't know about this one.
It's a Britney and Iggy Azalea collaboration. Came out last night. Debuted on the Billboard Music Awards.
Oh, I did not see that. Yeah, I will definitely check that out. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Yeah, so I think that about does it. I mean, anything else you want to say before we go?
One last thing about Pitch Perfect. Titanium is my lady jam.
And with that, we out.
This is Zach Harper of CBSSports.com. You're listening to Ray Ray's Fundamental Podcast, because Ray Ray is fundamental. You know, like those NBA commercials with the reading is fundamental. You get what I mean.
Thank you to Adam Reisinger once again for coming on the Ray Ray is Fundamental podcast. Follow him on Twitter at Adam Reisinger. I'll spell it out for you. You know how to spell Adam, and his last name is spelled Reisinger. In the meantime, you can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. You can also download the show at RayRay.net, and you can find the show on Stitcher as well. Follow the podcast on Twitter at RayRayIsFun, or you can follow my personal account at TheNoLookPass. While you're at it, you can follow all my NBA-related material at TheNoLookPass.com. Once again, I hope you enjoyed the Pitch Perfect podcast. Pitch Perfect 2 will be out on theaters on May 15th. Check it out. Gal Pal Squad, thanks for taking care of me. Everybody else, thanks so much for listening. And Anna Kendrick, will you please go out with me? And just remember, Ray Ray is fundamental, and you don't need a library card to check me out. Until the next episode, party people.
Hey, it must have been love. What is over now? But it's over right now.
The negative side effects of medical marijuana, folks. You are...
Game over, yeah! Mo did.